Luke Fox joins us now. We're going to do this every Saturday with his Quick Shifts piece on Sportsnet.ca. And Luke, as always, we appreciate you taking some time for us here on Sportsnet today. And let's get right into it. And, you know, you've got the Quick Shifts up. And the thing that really, you know, pulled at me is an update on Pavel Datsyuk, who's going to be 42 when the 2021 season begins. He put up 22 points in 43 games. And his agent says that he's considering all options. And does that mean, you know, whether retirement, KHL, or is the NHL still a possibility? Or based on conversations with Dan Milstein, do you think it's either he stays in the KHL or he decides to hang him up?
I think it's either he stays in the KHL or hangs them up. I think at this point, all options basically means retirement, returning to the team he was on, which is the team Automobilist that Bill Peters just got hired to coach this week, or maybe perhaps another KHL team if they come knocking, because he's going to be a free agent. But, you know, he celebrates a birthday in July, I believe. And, you know, to keep going at 42, his stats have declined. But no one will question the guy's love for the game. But just how many years he's played, he's pretty banged up. So, no, I don't think anyone would begrudge him if he hung him up. We saw Andrei Markov, you know, similar kind of situation. Had a fabulous NHL career. Went over, played a little bit back home, and then retired this week. So I don't think we'd be surprised either way, just because of his love for the game, the fact that he has a relationship with Peters dating back to their Red Wings days when Peters was an assistant under Babcock. So maybe he goes for one more year. I think it's a case of you know, listening to his body, seeing if he feels up for it. And of course, I think everyone's kind of taking a step back with just the conditions of the world that we're in right now. You know, he was in the playoffs and was actually performing well when suddenly that KHL shut down and just canceled the season outright about four games into the playoffs.
Yeah, Pavel Datsyuk, Lucas, I think one of the more fun players to watch back when he was with the Red Wings, seeing him lift people's sticks behind the net and so on. It was so much fun to just watch him operate. And similarly, another player, I think it'll be a little dimmer, I guess, the hockey world without him is Dustin Byfuglien. That was the big news yesterday, and they finally came to an agreement, right, to see his contract terminated, him and the Jets. And I wonder, like, I know no one really knows when it comes to Byfuglien, and will he return as a free agent? Will he walk off into the sunset and call it quits? I mean, he's played, I think, almost 650 games, got almost 450 points with the Jets over those games. I wonder, what's some of your favorite memories covering Byfuglien as a player?
Oh, man. I mean, what a treat that guy is. He's this wonderful, gigantic enigma. And my favorite for me personally was the Jets run where they won a couple rounds. They took Nashville to 7 and beat them and went on to the Western Conference Final in 18 against the Vegas Golden Knights. I got to cover the Jets in the whiteout for a couple of those rounds, and it was absolutely fabulous hockey. And he was such a force in those series, like just such a pleasure to watch, not only with clutch goals and, you know, some that blast from the point, but just the way he controlled the game and was such a threat. He was just running over guys. That opening round series against Minnesota, he just leveled guys. He was just like so dominant. And I guess probably my favorite image of him, I forget which team it was, but when he was dummying two guys at once, one in each hand, like he was just a bear of a man. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, his former teammate, said on one of the calls this week that, you know, no one was more relaxed during the game. He was just always chirping, always saying something to loosen up the guys. He would talk to fans. I remember he was a treat to watch him warm up. He'd go and body check his own teammates into the boards, kind of like just to loosen them up, because these are like these high stakes playoff games. And he was kind of like, hey guys, relax. It's a hockey game. We're out here having fun. And he just seemed to just love being out there. He didn't love talking to the media, but he loved being with the boys, and he loved, you know, the thrill of competition, contact, didn't shy away from anything. And I think the game will be a kind of a weaker a weaker sport with him out of it, because I think it's highly doubtful that, even though he's a free agent, that I don't know if the will is there. He didn't fight for the $6 million or so left on his contract. You know, no one's reported that he's working out, or, you know, it's such a layoff that he might just walk off quietly into the sunset here.
So it's interesting because, you know, everyone's now going to turn and pivot and say, well, oh, the Leafs should find a way to sign him on a cheap deal. And sure, that makes a lot of sense in theory. But I always got the impression that he really liked it in Winnipeg. You know, he's from sort of that area in the United States, and he decided to put down roots there and sign a long-term deal there. And, you know, if it didn't work out there, and clearly the ankle and the health was an issue, I just feel like it's a stretch to imagine him at this stage of his career, with the injury issues that he's had, signing a one-year cheap deal to try and go, I don't know, maybe chase a Stanley Cup.
It is, and I think the Leafs would be, you know, one of the last teams that makes sense. He's not a big city guy. I mean, I know he had a fabulous run in Chicago and won a cup and everything, but he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that craves this type of market. He's also a big personality. You know, when he was in that Jets room, it was basically him and Wheeler running the show. So, and then maybe Shifley as kind of like the third guy setting the tone. That's a strong personality to bring into your room for 1 year. So I think you'd have to make sure the fit is right. I would think, you know, if he joins a team and does want to take one last stab at it, I would expect it to be a team with a pretty better established veteran core, some guys who are obvious leaders. You know, I saw someone flown out there. Maybe the Lightning would be that type of team, you know. And then that's the other thing. Maybe it's a team that is definitely a contender, and he just, you know, takes less money and wants to win. But I don't know if that he wants to. I mean, your guess is as good as mine, what's going on in his head, but, you know, I don't get a strong feeling that he wants one last gasp to chase this thing, because he, like you said, Winnipeg was a good fit for him, and he was beloved by his teammates. It was close to his Minnesota home. So I don't know. This might be the last we see of the guy.
Speaking of big personalities, Luke, we saw one of the bigger personalities, it feels like, at least for Leafs fans, in Brad Marchand a couple days ago with the town hall, I think it was, he did for Bruins season ticket holders. And I remember watching part of that and thinking, man, people at Sportsnet or at the other network, let's say, are probably salivating at thinking that Marchand could be a potential someone who works in studio for them once his career is done, because he was absolutely terrific, I thought.
He was fabulous. I mean, I couldn't tell you the number of NHL players I've watched on various Zoom calls over the last 4 weeks or so, but I would say he was the best in terms of like a long form one guy. You know, he was, by turns, he was like funny. He was chirping his own teammates. He had some great one-liners, but he was also really insightful. You know, he answered questions directly to children and was really encouraging about what it takes to get to this level. He told a great story of how much the 2016 World Cup meant for him, and how he didn't really consider himself among those guys that should be representing Canada and that can make an impact in a best-on-best international tournament. And if you remember, he was on Crosby's line, and you know, I think he was around a point a game, and he was like a real big impact player in that tournament. And he said that really changed his own self-belief and felt like, okay, maybe I do belong amongst the upper echelon of players in this league. And I remember during that cup is when he signed his big extension with the Bruins. And then after that, you know, he got back to the final. He had his first 100-point year. And it was really interesting to say, for him to listen to him speak about how much that 16 tournament meant to him. I thought he was absolutely fabulous. You know, he was very relaxed, great public speaker, the exact opposite of the treatment he gave a poor Kyle Bukakis in the playoffs that one night.
Oh yeah, that was I totally forgot about that. And it's interesting that that he mentions the 2016 World Cup as maybe the jumping off point of his career, because you look at his numbers. You know, he had 37 goals, 61 points before the season before in 15-16, breakout season, terrific year. Then the following season, career high 39 goals, 85 points, 85 points in 17-18, 100 points in 18-19, and 87 points in 70 games. Now, sure, he started to blossom into more of an offensive dynamo just organically, but it does certainly seem like there's a tangible impact of playing on that type of team in that type of moment. He scored the I believe the eventual winner against the world team in the final. It really does seem like that had a positive impact into turning him into the consistent player that Leafs fans love to hate now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of refreshing to hear him say that coming on the heels of Drew Doughty earlier in the week, saying that even though he was, you know, teammates with Marchand and those guys won gold together, that how much that cup disrupted his season. And he said, Doughty was saying how sore he felt all of 16-17 because it was a September intense playoff, like, you know, for that World Cup right before they went into the season. And Marchand, it had the reverse effect. It kind of gave him a springboard and this boost of confidence. So it's just kind of, I just found it really fascinating how two different superstars, how one tournament and can have like drastically different effects. But, you know, Marchand said a bunch of interesting things. He really broke down how he tries to eat defenseman when he's bursting down the left wing and pulling the puck to the inside. Gave a really elaborate kind of analytical answer in that, which to your earlier point makes me think he'd be a great analyst someday if he so chose. And the other thing he gave some insight into how he thinks the pause here is going to affect teams coming back. And the Bruins are the oldest team on average in the East, and he says that the older teams he thinks are going to have a really rough time with, you know, what could be, you know, 2-3 potentially 4 months off. And he thinks teams like the one here in town, the Leafs, one of the younger teams, and the Lightning, high-skilled, young, fast teams, he thinks the pause will hurt them less. And that's the first time I heard a player say that, you know, there might be an advantage for the young teams coming back. So I thought that was interesting as well. He was really thoughtful.
I remember, Luke, Josh and I had spoke with Pat Steinberg out from 960, the Sportsnet 960, the fan, pardon me, in Calgary. And when we had a conversation with him, he had mentioned that, you know, if Calgary was to play Edmonton, let's say, in the first round, should the playoffs resume or the season resumes, you know, there'd be a lot of minor league players involved. And, you know, if we're going to extrapolate that to the Leafs, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of reliance, let's say, on the Marlies and some of the players who are down there with them. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the playoffs do resume, that they do return, we do actually get some form of competition in the postseason. Like, do you think really that the quality of hockey will really be that high? Like, it certainly seems like the NHL players might not be as ready to go, and therefore they might be relying a little more on players who are not right now with the major league club.
Yeah, Marchand said it's going to be ugly, and it's hard to argue. I mean, you think about the length of the layoff, you know, it's very realistic to believe that if we do get back hockey, it might not be till August. So, you know, you're talking about a really lengthy layoff that kind of like starting a new season, and you compare preseason exhibition games to games in late March and April when there's momentum going and you can taste the playoffs and you're battling for your lives, that it almost looks like a totally different sport. So that's what all these elite guys have been saying. It's like, it doesn't matter what you do off ice. It doesn't matter how many times you stick handle with a golf ball in your basement. Nothing can replicate actual ice time against fellow NHLers. And you know, so I think it'll be, you know, somewhere between kind of preseason October hockey. And I think I especially feel bad for the goalies. I mean, How do you even come close to replicating facing NHL caliber shots? I saw this one clip that was going around of Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida catching tennis balls out of a tennis ball gun in his glove, and I'm just like, I could do that, you know? It's just like, there's nothing to mimic it. So I think that's why the players have really been pushing, and Bettman has agreed that they're going to need at least 2 to 3 weeks of a mini camp with some form of exhibition or warm-up games to get them going. But even in spite of that, I think it will be a step below what we're used to seeing. On the flip side, the benefit is guys will be healthy. Stamkos will be healthy. Jake Gensel will be healthy. Tarasenko's healthy. Seth Jones. A lot of these superstars that may have been questionable will at least be back. So that might balance things a little bit.
Luke Fox is with us, NHL writer for Sportsnet.ca, Josh Goldberg, Show Ali across the Sportsnet Radio Network. So, you know, it was a little bit jarring to see actual transaction-type news come across our timelines yesterday, but Marco Scandella signs a 4-year extension with St. Louis. Jonas Korpisalo signs a 2-year deal with Columbus. You know, let's start with Scandella, and I was a little bit surprised because I remember when the deal got made with Montreal, it seemed like it was a possibility as just a pure rental, and then he would maybe head back to Montreal, and they've got Vince Dunn's an RFA, and certainly Pietrangelo is the big fish there for them to hopefully re-sign. So what do you make of that term, that deal, and the ramifications it might have on their ability to retain both Dunn and Pietrangelo?
Yeah, I agree with you. I was a little bit mildly surprised. I mean, the guy only played 11 games for that organization, 1 assist. You know, it's a pretty small sample size to go ahead and give him 4-year commitment. To me, the first thing that it screams to me is, unfortunately, I don't think this is good news for the idea of Jay Bouwmeester continuing his career after what was just a frightening incident. You know, and of course, that guy is, you know, has enough accomplishments that, you know, his health and his well-being comes first and foremost. But because Scandella's a left shot like Bouwmeester, I think basically he's going to slide in and take those minutes moving forward. I think that was the first thing that indicates to me Dunn and Pietrangelo play the right side. So I don't think that's Dunn does play left. But I don't think that necessarily means that those guys are on their way out. I see this as a Bouwmeester replacement, but I also see this as Doug Armstrong. You know, he took care of 3 contracts this week, which was a little surprising, considering we don't know what the cap's going to be, but I think he's tying up all loose ends, and kind of that way it almost gives him a little bit of an advantage when he sits down in a room and has to nail something out with Pietrangelo as captain, because he's going to say, look, I can't give you any more than this. We'll go over the cap. So maybe this is partly a play by him to get his other ducks in order and just say, this is what I have to work with. And if we can fit you in under this, then great. If not, then maybe call his bluff and dare him to really go. If you really want money more than sticking with this excellent decor, this excellent championship team, these guys you like, this city that you've fallen in love with and you've raised your triplets in, then go ahead if money means that much more to you. Or do you take $1 million less or $800,000 less a year and stay with us and fit within our cap structure?
Yeah, Luke, the Columbus Blue Jackets, I think, are one of the more interesting teams just because of essentially how they remade the team in the wake of the trade deadline last year, right? Like, after all these guys left, they didn't seem to go all in. Then some people left, some people stayed. Of course, Bobrovsky, as we've talked about. Now we have the Jonas Korpisalo deal, which I think I really like. But between Korpisalo and Merzlikins, it feels like the Blue Jackets are pretty much set at goal in the wake of Bobrovsky leaving last year.
Yeah, and a year ago, I was kind of critical of them because I felt like they're going into a season with no proven number one goalie. Just a couple of prospects, you know, hoping one can take the reins and hoping they can play that many games. Because, you know, previously, Korpisalo was just doing, you know, kind of the Curtis McElhinney type role, picking up the second half of back-to-backs. You know, if Bobrovsky got injured for a while, he'd have a little run. But he'd never been a number one. And, you know, Merzlikins was virtually unproven at the NHL level. So to go into a season where you're coming off the heels of the best season in franchise history, finally winning a round. You have cap space to go out and sign a goalie if you want, because all the big money guys left to other teams in free agency, and rolling the dice with two young unproven guys, I thought was a really risky move. And, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen got the last laugh. I mean, he proved me and some other doubters wrong, because that tandem was absolutely fabulous. You know, they do have the benefit of playing with one of the more underrated decors in the league, and a coach that stresses, you know, responsible own zone play. You know, Tortorella's infamous for loving his guys to block shots and try to limit really high quality chances against the goalies. But kudos to Korpisalo and Merzlikins for performing, you know, probably the best bargain tandem in the whole NHL. And they'll probably continue to be that. You know, 2.8 AAV for 2 years is a fabulous deal. And I think it also speaks to players' willingness. Some of these guys this week, just happy to get some security, just because of the economic situation in the league and in the world is so up in the air that maybe, hey, if someone's going to guarantee me over $5 million, I'm going to take it right now.